district attorney or have a meeting with our mayor, which they were under the, you know, under the impression that those entities were going to be working on their behalf to help them find out answers about the death of Quanis, which is a child that was here in Portland that was murdered basically by the police. And so with no answers, no questions, and really no engagement from the people that are doing the investigation, we want to go ahead and raise the issue so that when the grand jury goes into session, that there is a voice from the community demanding justice and that we don't exonerate another officer without the opportunity to indict and take this case to court.
Had Mayor Wheeler made any sort of attempt at outreach to the family? Because it seemed as though his initial statement seemed as though he was supportive of the investigation and supportive of the family.
From what I've seen and from what I've heard, he has not maintained contact, and that's why we're doing a protest. We met with the community along with the family this week, and we're going to be doing this in partnership with the AMA Coalition and Black Lives Matter Portland and hopefully other agencies. I know I spoke to some people that are connected to Surge, and we've already talked to some of the Lewis and Clark law students so that we can make sure that we have NLG support. But we're looking for community organizations that stand up for Black lives and really for social justice and human rights to make statements and to demand, again, accountability and answers, because having a replica in the state of Oregon, if that is what they're saying that caused them to murder this child, is not illegal. The fact that he was murdered in cold blood is illegal if we can criminalize the action. Because it is done by an officer doesn't mean that it is done legally. And I think that this whole system of grand jury, that it's not transparent. The family's asking for transparency. They're asking that when a process goes into place, that there's a transcript that's made public. They're asking for answers right now before the grand jury, because there's information that they would like to know personally in regards to the death of their child. I mean, most of the information that they've received is from media.
Teresa, it's Zelos Marchant here. Could you break down the process? I think a lot of our audience might not be completely aware of the legal processes that are in place right now for when something like this happens to a child in our community, like Quanis. I don't think a lot of people are aware of you know, whether something goes to grand jury. And I think I could speak for some KBOO reporters when we go and are interviewing the public. A lot of people are under the assumption that there's a fast track to justice where you can just say, that's illegal, that's going to a grand jury. And I don't think people are aware of like what options are in place right now.
Absolutely. Well, our grand jury system here in Oregon and really in Multnomah County has been basically like referred to as worse than the one they have in Louisiana, which we know is still based on state-sanctioned discrimination. And it's a system that's basically developed and built to incarcerate marginalized community members. And so what we found here, because there is no transparency in the process, is that the officers in these cases are usually exonerated, and the grand jury is usually sealed, and the testimony is not available to the public. So there's no, quantifying the outcome or reviewing it or analyzing what actually happens during this process. And just the fact that autopsy information or any intimate information regarding the child's death, I mean, he hasn't even had a funeral yet. That the district attorney is not sharing that information with the family seems to be, it is showing that they're not wanting to be accountable or transparent, not even to the family, but they are being very accountable to the press in regards to releasing information. And I think that that's basically why we're doing this protest, because accountability to press before family just is very disconcerting. The family, the mom, I talked to her yesterday, her and the grandmother were together when they found out that Quanis was murdered, and they found out from Facebook. They found out from news media outlets. the agencies that are out here supporting community policing efforts and community support systems, when other issues happen within the family, they knew how to contact the mom. But at the time that the child was murdered by the police, there was no access to the mother from their end, and that's what they're stating. And so that doesn't add, you know, or lend any credibility to this process of grand jury, which we know, again, has not ever indicted an officer that has shot anyone that is a person of color or any officer that I can recall.
Oh, that is deep information, incredibly deep information. And so just to be clear, so Kiwanis is still the, his body is still being held while this process is going?
There hasn't been any announcement for a funeral or anything. And like I said, family will be down at the Portland building tomorrow, but they haven't been able to have a funeral for their child. They're still holding on to this. There is no closure. And the indecency of all of that is on behalf of our city and our district attorney's office. I mean, just giving the family the impression that as a district attorney, that you're even going to work for them in a city that's known for non-indictments of law officials or police officers in brutality cases and murders, is just very disingenuous. And when we talk about what's been happening in the city of Portland over the last 6 years since the Keith Notice and the Aaron Campbell murders and the James Chastity murder with the DOJ settlement and even the collective bargaining agreement, it looks as if the people with the most power and access to the will of mandates are not using any of it in any way, in any platform, whether it's court-ordered or not, to provide public safety or even the sense of public safety or engagement. You know, as protesters, if we scream the name like we did on Not My President's Day, you're met with brutal force, you know? So I don't see that there's an accommodation for justice here, and especially not for Black children.
That's a very, I agree, that's a very unique loophole in the Onigen system. I know that Oregon, paradoxically, is unique in that we have a database where you can see the outcomes of different court hearings, but that in this case, if it's something that is requiring, you know, an officer to go under review and for something to go to grand jury, that information is not accessible to the public and that data is withheld is incredible. Have you heard of any movements in that regard to changing how Oregon State keeps its data and what is public information and what is not?
I believe that there are some social justice organizations that are working on those platforms. I know that I've shared media memes and things of that sort that have information. I know that the ACLU has written letters about the grand jury system and has called out our district attorney for the way that they use it to kind of, you know, deflect from the justice that people are seeking through that whole process because of the standard, you know, of a non-indictment. So I think that there are organizations that are working on it. And I wanted to mention that I think it was in 2015 that Don't Shoot Portland had worked with the National Lawyers Guild to basically conduct a workshop training on it. And I remember, if correctly, Jennifer Williamson had showed up at that event. And I've said this before, but she was saying, like, if we wanted to reform the grand jury system, that we needed to basically try to abolish it because it's not working in a way that would enhance public safety or rehabilitate anyone that is caught up in the justice system, and especially those that are targeted and marginalized for incarceration. It's a system that adopts and abets that whole process of incarceration, actually.
You just were speaking a little bit about how even just speaking the names of people was getting, I don't know if people saw the video online. You can check through Don't Shoot Portland's social media where you can see videos of how the police reacted at your action there on Monday. For people who haven't seen the video, could you maybe describe a little bit what happened that day?
Well, yeah, actually, you know, it was a national holiday, President's Day, so there wasn't an expectation that there would be a lot of traffic. And with the crowd that we got, we were basically on the sidewalk at the federal building. And if you're able to check out these videos, there's actually like shrubbery and some kind of system that's set up to where there's like a like brushes, you know, like a little wall of dirt and sidewalks where we were at that, you know, kind of creates a wall. And actually, we were practicing the chant. We're listening to this Janelle Monáe song, Hell You Talking About, and I was telling everybody that we raise the name when we hear that chant, that when we say his name, that for the whole time that we're doing our protesting or our rally, that we would always say Quanah Taves because he's from our community, he was murdered, and that people have come out to support the Black Lives Matter movement when it's across the nation, but we wanted to raise his name in elevation, you know, just to demand justice in his honor. And so that's what we were practicing on the sidewalk again, with a sound system and everything else. We're doing civil disobedience. We didn't have a permit. We've done several protests without permits, several rallies without permits. But this day was different. We had a lot of elderly community members that came out. We had people with disabilities. We had a lot of children, babies, families. And we had already asked the mayor through a press conference, or basically requested that he not, you know, receive us with force, that we not have to deal with force because of the nature of the protest in regards to a child being murdered, a 17-year-old. And there were other 17-year-olds and friends of his that would be in attendance. So to not re-traumatize our community, to not reach us with excessive force. And based on the grounds that we're peaceful protesters that are known and have credibility in our community for community outreach. And so we didn't expect that there would be police, but when we got there around 10 o'clock, there were already armed SWAT teams and riot cops around the corner. And as 11:15, 11:30 rolled around, we started seeing the presence of the bike squads and then the riot trucks and then LRADs. And I mean, by 11:30, we were being brutally attacked, chased, like, you know, people being knocked off of their bikes. And if you look at the video, it was all aggression on behalf of the forces. And it kind of tripped me out because the night before, the mayor had went on a press conference and basically stated that he was going to de-escalate unpermitted or illegal protests. And it's not illegal to freely assemble, and it's not illegal to not have a permit to do so. I just was on trial here in Multnomah County back in April, and was exonerated for, you know, basically disorderly conduct or whatever the district attorney attached to protesting. So I knew that, you know. I think Judge Greenlick knew that in the jury that exonerated me. So I didn't understand why they would not only violate the free assembly and the free speech, but why they would go the extra level of, like, jumping onto the sidewalk and beating people, aggressively attacking people, assaulting 67-year-old women, arresting maybe six children. I mean, that was extremely excessive. And then to the point of chasing, you know, a woman who they, you know, the mayor knows, we're in Portland, small knit. I just got out of the hospital. I just had a major women's surgery, and I had to be chased through the city of Portland by an LRAD. No, if there are children in this country that are afraid of a police officer pulling up to them, can you imagine how I felt as a black woman being chased by, you know, massive trucks with SWAT riot trucks, riot cops on them with guns and mace. Even the EMTs were outfitted in riot gear and had what looked to be tear gas attached to their uniforms. So it was a very aggressive scene, and it all happened before noon in Portland.
Wow. Yes, people haven't seen other videos when they're talking about the police chasing you. I've seen videos where they're just announcing your name through the street, obviously targeting you. It was quite shocking to see all the footage that came out of there. And if people are talking, what you were just speaking about, where the riot police didn't necessarily just target people who were standing in the street. They literally rushed the crowd that was on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. And I can say the reason that I say that they were chasing me is because I was very conscious of my situation. I had on a blue raincoat when we first got there, had on hoods and hats and everything. And I had to, like, when I noticed, like, the police being aggressive or looking in our direction, I don't know what kind of force we're paying here, but pretty much I was able to, like, remove my raincoat, and then they would run past me and look both ways and with their, like, gear and everything, looking very hardened and mad and aggressive as if they're looking for someone. They had already announced, hey, you in a blue raincoat, you're subject to arrest. And I got on the loudspeaker, and 20 seconds later, they were running into the crowd. And so every time I noticed that they were getting into some type of formation, it was easy as taking off a hat or a hoodie or putting a scarf on or taking off your raincoat, and they would run right past me, which made me feel even worse about what we were out there for, because if they couldn't identify me amongst maybe 60 to maybe 100 people as the person that they're targeting when they're rushing each time, and I'm watching them look, then they couldn't possibly be really good at investigating or looking for suspects or people that they think are suspected of crimes. I'm wondering, like, what type of training and why are they so aggressive? And do they realize that as humans, that increases your adrenaline rush and you're going crazy? Like, they were out of order. Mm-hmm. I think that whoever was commanding them that day needs to be indicted on brutal assault charges, because there was some real serious warfare going on, and we'll see them in court.
No, sure. So we're here. We have about 30 seconds left here on the air. Can you just give out the information about your action tomorrow at the city council meeting for those who want to show their support?
Absolutely. We're going to be at the Portland building right across the street from City Hall at 9 a.m. with the family of Quanah Hayes. We're asking for community support, and we're asking for organizations that stand up for Black lives to make public statements. Send someone from your organization down to make a statement and show solidarity for this family. We need to stand together. Thank you.
Yeah, if people are looking for more information online, you can find the event page on Facebook at Demand Justice for Quanah Hayes. That's Teresa Rayford. Thank you very much for joining
us, Teresa.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members